world's not as simple as it used to be. It's not enough to be a good guy anymore. We have to be the best. The time has come. All will be accounted for, or we will hunt them. Stand up. It's time to be the heroes we were always meant to be.
Hey, did you guys know Akon started his own cryptocurrency and it's called Acoin? I wish I was making a joke.
How hard has it been for you to like sit on that all night and not say
No, I literally just saw this headline.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm looking at it and it's kind of beautiful.
Not a fan of that boy, Mr. Akon.
Although I think Steven has all of his money still wrapped up in, Spin Doctor's cash, and that's why he's, real sad. The Spin Bucks didn't turn into anything, you know.
Hey, man, you know what? That blockchain is gonna fragment the hyper marketplace. I don't actually know what any of the cryptocurrency buzzwords, guys.
I don't think anybody does.
I think it's just worth however much people say it's worth.
Sorry. I just found more information on this Eminem Punisher. Crap.
Okay, I think on that note, I think we might as well just go ahead and actually get started, because we are all itching to talk about that comic, apparently. Ahoy! Hello! Welcome, everybody! Hi! That was embarrassing. I said ahoy.
Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy.
And now we devolve into the Simpsons references. Hi! Welcome to the Superhuman Registration Podcast, a show where we talk about and rank all of the comics on Marvel Unlimited. I am Stephen Bradford, and with me tonight, as always, is Aldo Gomez. Hello, Aldo.
Hello!
And John Crowder. Hi, John.
Bonsoir.
You actually called him John. You always
I almost him. Called him Jonathan again. I know he doesn't like it.
At all. Not at all.
It's not a complete name. It's Jonathan.
Hey, if it was good enough for the Baptist, it's good enough for me.
So, anyway, we are the Superhuman Registration Podcast, and we are here to talk about some Marvel comics. And do we have a bit that we do right here? Because I don't know what it would be. I think I just want to get in to start talking about these weird little stories.
Let's just start talking about the... Maybe that's the bit. The bits.
Maybe that's the bit.
We just so, get to business.
We are trying a little bit of a different format this week. I'm going to call this our back issue dive. We're not focusing strictly on Marvel Comics stories. Like, we think of stories, and we're usually thinking about event comics or, you know, multi-part stories that run through several different issues or along one of the, like, the Spider Family crossovers or the X-Men crossovers. Not today. Today, we are doing three single-issue stories, and these are quite possibly the weirdest stories that we have read to date.
This is like the weirdest combination of stories. I feel like up until this point, everything we've chosen has been like with a theme or with a purpose.
Yep.
Yeah, well, purpose definitely. I don't think there's a purpose behind... Well, okay, I think one of these stories has a purpose, but the other two are just kind of, hi, you exist.
Yep.
Well, like, I mean, even then, like, the purpose behind stuff was, like, we wanted, like, a crappy one, or we wanted, like, a really good one, or it was a movie coming out. And this time, we were just, like, three single issues, and then we were just, like, oh, here's three single issues.
Literally chosen basically at random.
Yes.
I'm going to maintain that mine is entertaining and, doesn't make you think and doesn't make you hate yourself. So
we'll get into each of these. I think the best way to handle this is we're gonna each of us take a minute to introduce the story that we brought to the table and just talk about it a little bit. We'll go through our normal plot summary, and then we'll take some time to talk about the intricacies of the plot, the art, you know, the usual routine that we do here.
Yes.
And because of the pre-recording banter, I think we kind of have to start with Eminem Punisher.
I think we do.
Okay, so this is the one that I brought to the table, and I literally just picked this because there's a comic on Marvel Unlimited called Eminem Punisher, and on the cover, it has the Punisher, and it has the rapper, Marshall Mathers, Slim Shady, Eminem, and that is the end of my thought process. Like, let's pick this book because it looks crazy.
I was going to say, you ignored the voice saying, no!
I ignore that voice as often as I can.
Can I give context to this? Like,
So Aldo, you actually did get some context on this. So why don't you go ahead and give us that context before we dive into the plot?
I did, and I don't mind giving context for two of them. I don't care. It's fine.
That's good, because I did not do my homework.
That's fine. This became increasingly more interesting before it just ended anticlimactically. So, Eminem vs. Punisher, or Eminem / Punisher, came out in 2009 to help promote Eminem's latest album at the time, which was Relapse. So this comes from Eminem, Slim Shady, Marshall Mathers, the man of many names, promoting the new album by dressing up as the Punisher on the cover of XXL magazine. And in that magazine was half the issue that we read today, and then the other half was released digitally.
Oh, yep, I see it right here. Wow, that sure is a skinny white boy trying to look tough.
So the result of all this was the beautiful masterpiece we're about to read.
So Eminem Punisher... This is a really straightforward story. It begins with Eminem at a concert, just wrapping up. He leaves the concert to go get some Coney dogs, and he and his crew of bodyguards get ambushed by the Punisher. Eminem shoots back at him and then gets yanked out of the line of fire by a burlier guy, a man named Barracuda, who is, by the way, a recurring Punisher villain. There aren't many of them, so it's always noteworthy when we have one. So Barracuda hauls Eminem off. They lure the Punisher into a trap. Eminem ambushes the Punisher and knocks him out in what is the single most unbelievable story beat I've ever seen. And then Barracuda, of course, betrays Eminem, knocks him out, shoots him in the chest, but Eminem's wearing Kevlar. So Barracuda gets this idea that he's going to take Eminem and the Punisher, tie them up, put them on a boat. They go up to, like, the North Pole or something crazy. They're sailing through icy waters. Barracuda's just going to dump the bodies over the side so that they disappear, and this is going to fuel Eminem conspiracy theories that no, he's not really dead, and Barracuda's gonna make a ton of money selling Eminem merch.
That's such a weird, like, bit of side plot. Like,
it's so dumb. And then, like, Eminem and the Punisher, they break free and they fight, and Barracuda gets dumped in the water. Eminem gets dumped in the water again, and Punisher just takes off. Quick note on the creator, the main creator that I know. This has art by Salvador LaRocca, and we can talk about the art in a minute, but I want to talk about the writer first. Fred Van Lente. Now, Mr. Van Lente is a known quantity in Marvel Comics. I mainly know him from his work on the Incredible Hercules story. After World War Hulk, the title in The Incredible Hulk ended, but it was taken over by The Incredible Hercules. And that run is really good. Fred Van Lente is known for having a fairly comedic style. He has done a lot of different comics. He's one of his most well-known independent works is an exploration of different philosophies and philosophical schools called Action Philosophers. So I'm familiar with Fred Van Lente's work because he's been around for a while. He did a lot of work for Valiant Comics, and it's very good stuff. And so seeing his name on this, I think, might have actually been the real tipping point when it's like, okay, this might actually be worth reading.
For me, the thing that surprised me was seeing LaRocca's name attached to this.
Oh, do you know LaRocca? Because I'm actually not terribly familiar with
him. I couldn't name off titles off the top of my head. I don't follow him, like, dedicatedly. But I've seen his name attached to a few comics I've enjoyed. So kind of seeing him on this, I mean, his art style is good. It just... I don't know, man. Just seeing people on this project and the, like, a name I recognized, I don't get it.
As whenever we, you know, you ask why a creative person is doing something, it's like, why on earth would it? It's a job. Yes. I was listening to an interview with Neil Adams, and he talked about, you know, making great money drawing Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis comics. you know, really easy to do their likeness. They're, you know, famous. It was an easy job, and it paid really, really well. And so that let him, you know, do Batman, I guess.
And I imagine that this probably paid fairly well, too. I mean, it's not only got, you know, the Marvel logo on it, but it also has Shady Records. So there must have been some of that sweet, sweet M&M money behind this, too.
This is why it weirds me out, because LaRocca's been, like, on a lot of things, a lot of, like, pretty notable things.
Uh-huh.
He was the main artist when they started doing the Darth Vader comics after Disney got the rights. That's his
work. You know what? That actually makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, looking at the art, and specifically looking at the inks... We'll talk about the colors in a minute, but looking at the inks, this is a man who knows how to do fairly realistic-looking people.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, he does a pretty good likeness of Slim Shady, of Eminem. I kind of am embarrassed that I just called him Shady. But I think you need that if you're doing something that is a movie tie-in. Either mm-hmm. that or you need to go ultra-stylized.
He's also one of those people who, when they did... when they were doing the Iron Man comics after the movies came out and they were going for a more Robert Downey look, he was one of those guys as well.
Yep, that fits.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about actual impressions from the story here. What did you guys think? John, you seem to have some pretty strong opinions.
I'm trying to formulate them into something that sounds better than just, ugh.
I think it was just
like I don't know enough of the Shady's backstory to really, you know, like, yes, he seems to have some run-ins with the law in his past. I don't know, man. I haven't listened to his stuff since high school. It just seems like he's like puffing himself up, and like, really, like any celebrity can go toe-to-toe with the Punisher. Why do we have this, you know? Like, and the art's not bad. I think that it would have worked better, I think, if they didn't go so stylized. Because some of these shots of Eminem, it's like, you can tell he went really close from reference, you know? Because the pose doesn't always work as well.
Yeah, I definitely see that on page 11 going off of the numbering in Marvel Unlimited. You've got a picture of Eminem, and he's like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? He's talking back to the Punisher, but the look on his face is just like, his lower lip is curled out, and you can see his bottom row of teeth,
yeah.
And his eyes are kind of dead and vacant. It's, which artist, Aldo, is it that kept, like, tracing porn stars? It's one of the Gregs. Is it Greg Land?
No, not Land, Oh, gee willikers, I hate when you put me on the spot like this.
Horn, it's Greg Horn.
Ah, that rhymes.
Meet the artist, Gregory Horn. He likes to draw by tracing porn. Anyway, on that note... So, Eminem, as a performer, has had always these two weird sort of extremes that he plays to. He's been very controversial, very shocking, and very goofy, but he's also been very sincere, very raw, and actually vulnerable in a lot of ways. And this is playing more to the first part, which is this over-the-top, very offensive performer that's also a bit of a clown. And the fact that they actually play up the clown aspect of Eminem makes me kind of like this story a little bit. Like, I didn't expect to actually come away liking it, but I actually read it twice. I read it again this afternoon in preparation for the podcast, and I keep going to this one panel on page 13. Barracuda has Eminem and the Punisher on the boat. He rips Eminem out of the chains. Like, he actually breaks the chains apart with his teeth, grabs Eminem, throws him over the side of the boat, and Eminem just lands with this loud thud on the ice, and the next panel just cuts to him, and he's lying on the ice with his butt just up in the air. He just looks ridiculous.
What's more ridiculous is next, that they're out in the middle of nowhere, but Eminem just stumbles upon an ice fisherman who happens to be listening to Eminem at that moment, and he's like, I'm your biggest fan. I'd do anything for you. And then he lets Eminem borrow his chainsaw. And then Eminem chainsaws Barracuda. That's where it went off the rails for me. I was like,
so the thing is, you actually just super skimmed over my favorite part of this whole comic book. which is that little part where he finds the guy ice fishing, because they just flat out copied the lyrics from Stan.
Oh my gosh.
Where he says, I know you probably hear this all the time, but I'm your biggest fan. I got a house full of your pictures and your posters, man.
I did not realize that was a Stan reference. That's hilarious. Yep.
One of my other favorite things about this whole issue is how many times, it's dumb, how many times it just references songs.
Yeah, Barracuda singing Mockingbird.
He sings Mockingbird, and then when he throws Slim Shady on the ice, he's doing the my name is what?
Yep. My actual legitimate favorite thing about this issue is who hired Barracuda to kill Eminem.
Them blue hairs at the Parents Music Council really don't like you.
It's so dumb. Like, I don't think the Parents Music Council is a thing that actually exists.
They probably don't want to actually accuse a real organization.
Because they'll send a killer after you. This whole thing is a cautionary tale.
Yeah, so the Punisher recovers after Eminem chainsaws Barracuda. Punisher gets up, and he winds up leaving Eminem on the ice, but he strands him on the ice. He doesn't actually kill him. He's like, Eminem, you're a criminal. You tried to kill me. You've hired a bunch of criminals, but you also saved my life, so I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to leave you here stranded on the ice with this satellite phone, and now I'm going to go take out the Parents Music Council.
Just this whole thing is just dumb.
It is so dumb. It is so dumb.
I really don't want to say, what's his name, LaVenti?
Van Lente.
I don't want to think he's a lazy writer. And I think in his other work he probably isn't. But this is so many coincidences. You know, Slim Shady is doing a concert. He had a bulletproof vest that could protect him from those, like, no big old slugs.
Yeah, from like 2 feet away or whatever.
Yeah. I also think it's really convenient that there's like a fisherman out there in the ice who happens to have a chainsaw with him. I also think it's real convenient that Frank Castle can shoot circles around you even though you're in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that angle, the way that he's shooting there, Eminem should 100% be dead.
It's like, yeah, he would have been cut in half.
I also think it's hilarious that Barracuda throws Eminem off the boat and he tells him he's all out of encores.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Punisher wants to be in this comic as much as I want to read it.
I don't know. What do you guys think about the Punisher as a character? Just in general.
I think he can be done well, but I think he really shines in some of the Max stuff. There's a couple Max things. They're hard to read in the sense of, like, there's some pretty adult, pretty dark stuff that happens in them.
Uh-huh.
But I think Frank Castle is kind of the character you need for those type of stories.
Yeah. The thing about the Punisher for me is he's a villain.
Yeah.
Like, he gets his start as the villain in a Spider-Man comic. I know we talked about this a little bit when we covered Civil War.
Yeah.
The Punisher, to me, doesn't really work in the world of superheroes, because there's no chance that Captain America would leave the Punisher around to operate. There's no chance that Spider-Man would leave this guy running around. There's no chance that Daredevil wouldn't take him down, when it actually turns out that the Daredevil and Punisher have a weird sort of friendship, which is one of the things, as a quick tangent, that the Netflix show gets really well. Daredevil season 2.
That was some of the best scenes in that show were the Punisher scenes with him and Daredevil. It really well done. That's mostly my exposure to the Punisher. I've only seen him in little bits and pieces, and there is a part in Civil War when, you know, he does join up with Cap, and then Cap kicks him out because some villains approach them to help Cap on, you know, on his side, and Punisher just kills him because he's like, nope, they're villains, nope.
I think for me, like, some of the best Punisher stuff has been the stuff where it's satisfying to see him kill. And I mean this because he hits a lot of ground level stuff that isn't typical superhero stuff. He's more of like kind of like a real crime, like a true crime type of guy. But there's particularly a short story where he finds child pornographers.
Yeah.
And, like, the stuff he does to them, you're just like, oh, yeah, do that to them. There's a range of Punisher comics from kind of goofy to way too dark to, like, just right. And I feel like this is in the camp of way too goofy.
You know, and I'm okay with it being goofy.
Oh, yeah. It's comics.
Yeah. And I gotta say, like, I was gonna say about the character of the Punisher, if the Punisher's gonna be, quote-unquote, the hero then I kind of don't want to see him very much. I just want to... You kind of just want the cathartic violence of, I want to see this guy wreck some terrible, terrible people and then get on with my life. And that's kind of the Punisher that showed up for this. He is in this story to be a plot device. He moves the plot forward. He sets up Eminem. He's the straight man. Eminem is the Joker. I'm actually kind of okay with that. Like, this is not going on anybody's list of top 10 comics, except it's probably going to be in our list of top 10 comics.
Oh, it's in ours of top 10 comics for now.
We need to really hurry and read some more comics so that we have this in...
What do you think we're trying to do? I have issues with the inking in this book. The coloring. It's in this weird sort of uncanny valley for me, where the faces they look too, like, goofy and rubbery to be real, but they have too much detail, too much photographic minutiae to be cartoony. It looks like a bad Instagram filter. And I kind of hate to say that because, again, this is a job and we're talking about somebody's job. But the colors in this just do not work for me at all.
You know who they remind me of? And I think it's funny because I know you also don't like this artist. Fraser Irving.
Yeah, I actually prefer Fraser Irving to this.
Yeah. Though.
But you're not wrong. You're not wrong. This looks a lot like some of the coloring that I've seen on Fraser Irving, especially his Batman
stuff. I'm actually pretty fond of this type of art. It's not my favorite, like, by any means. Like, I really love, like, stuff like Bachalo and some of the more cartoony-looking guys.
He's awesome.
But, like, stuff like this, I kind of love it because of the facial expressions. And there's some really good facial expressions in here that I think work for the tone of the comic that we're reading.
Yeah, there are some that are bad, but why don't you point out some of the good ones?
So for me, it's actually, I think it's like page 14, where Eminem sees that...
the ice fisherman?
He sees the ice fisherman, and he gets that, the chainsaw. Like, that's a real...
It's still too close to photo reference.
Yeah.
It is, but it's a good expression. Mm-hmm. That expression is spot on.
I'm just not as big of an Eminem fan as you guys. I don't deny his talent, though.
But it's not so much that it's an Eminem thing. It's not even the fact that it looks like him. It's really just that expression, like that face. Like, that could be anybody else making that face.
Right.
But that face tells you everything you need to know about what's going to happen. Mm. And I kind of love it for that reason.
It's a good just rendering of a...
kind of smug looking person.
I gotta say, I also love when he actually gets the chainsaw and shows back up on the boat.
Page 16.
When he's standing there and he's got his little hero pose with the chainsaw up in the air and the sun kind of setting behind
him. Oh, yeah. But it's just him in sweatpants.
It's just him in sweatpants. It's so dumb.
All right. Was Barracuda losing his fingers? Wait, actually, did he die in this?
Oh, yeah. No, Barracuda, I read up on Barracuda a little bit. Wikipedia has a list of injuries that he survived, including getting stabbed in the eye with a knife, getting garroted by razor wire. He's had gunshots to the arm. He's had fingers broken. He's been shot by an M60. Third degree burns from an exploding vehicle. Both arms chopped by a fire axe. Another stab to the chest later on. And getting chewed through with a fully automatic AK-47. And that's what finally killed him. This list doesn't actually include any of the injuries that he sustained in this comic. So again, like, I'm a little disappointed. Nobody
this was just it. For those kids who were banging down the office doors at Marvel saying, where is the Eminem and Punisher crossover?
Why wasn't Eminem in Secret Wars?
You put Archie with the Punisher, why not Eminem? Where's Eminem's
day? I was actually going to bring that up. Punisher has a lot of weird crossovers. The Punisher is a character that I think you can drop into something like this, and he works.
You can, but should you?
Yes! Demonstrably, you should, because this exists, and it's kind of great.
Oh, boy.
So, Aldo, I know you have another comic that you want to give an intro to, but I think before we go to that, let's move on to John's comic and let him do an intro here.
Well, you know what? I was thinking about this. The best intro is just what Scotty Young wrote in the beginning. So I chose... A Babies versus X Babies. It was a one shot. It came out after the AVX storyline in 2012. the Avengers versus the X-Men, the whole, well, you can read into that later. We'll probably do that at some point. But this was just a one-shot that went along with it. And it says on this great, you know how they have an opening kind of title page, kind of setting the stakes in a lot of these big crossovers, showing who's on what side, what's going on, what characters are featured. Over the top of that, they have a piece of notebook paper with crayon drawings of the heroes, kind of drawn in the child style. And it says, the book you're about to read doesn't have anything to do with the AVX event, but it does have baby versions of the Avengers and X-Men fighting each other. So yeah, you're buying a book where babies fight babies. What does that say about you? And that's all you need to know. That literally, that's all you need to know. And everything else is just fun little Easter eggs. So we can move on to Deadpool and come back to this.
No, we got to talk about this now that we're here.
Yeah, we got to talk about it.
John, you want to give us the plot breakdown?
Yeah. Baby Steve Rogers is going to bed. And he lives in Marvelous Meadows. See? Marvel? Huh? On the corner of Fury Way and Xavier Way. And he's... Now, did you guys catch the Muppet Babies reference?
No.
The first page. Okay. Or second page, I guess. Yeah. The mom has the same lower torso as Nanny. anyway, he's putting his teddy bears to bed, and they all have different ranks. There's General Bear, Sergeant Bear, but Bucky Bear is missing, and he looks out the window. Also, note the Howard the Duck poster on the wall in his room.
Of course.
And Scott Summers has Bucky Bear, and so he assembles the Avengers, and they all come out of their collective cribs. Also, note the lowercase a on Cap's outfit.
Just, I'm so glad
that's
you
what
that
that's
out.
What makes me really happy is these little funny details, you know.
The star on Captain America's uniform
has a little smiley face. And this, like, they're all, you know, little baby versions of them. You know, Black Widow has super soakers. And Hawkeye's pretty much the same. I'm just looking at him.
That's,
I'm like,
that's 100% just Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I really love the Hulk.
The Hulk, when he Hulks out, he fills the crib. So Helicarrier comes out of the pool, and little Nick Fury assembles all of them. I tried to make a list of all the different characters that pop up in here. Oh, there's Warpath.
So many
I missed a bunch because there's, like, I think Power Pack is in the background somewhere.
Power Pack is in the background on page 10.
There's also, like, a little Beta Ray Bill that Thor is writing.
And there's Hope and Cable. Hope and Cable are, like, part of the main storyline of AVX, and their whole story is one of my favorite X-Men stories. But this huge splash page on here, on page 10, is just incredible. This was just fun. This is just mindless, just, like, really great art. I really love the style.
All of these characters are drawn up in this super cute, cartoony style, and they just are beating on each other for, you know, 20 pages. And it's all about custody. Who can keep custody of Bucky Bear?
Yep,
Iron Man swoops in and grabs it from Iceman, and then Iron Man's armor flies apart, revealing his diaper underneath, because Magneto has come by. And Magneto is just this... this is my favorite image in the whole thing. It's Magneto in his classic purple costume, and he's got the giant domed head. His eyes are just pure white. There is no pupil, and he's got a pacifier in his mouth with a little magnet on the end.
You know, I did not notice that being a magnet until just now. Yeah.
That's adorable.
That's the little the first time I read this, what really kills me is this next page here, starting on page 13. Wolverine gets hit by Mjolnir, or I don't know what cute baby name it has, but Mjolnir knocks him into someone's room. And there's all these little Easter eggs. There's a spider pig on the ground there. There's a little Baxter building. The blocks behind him spell, "Go, Wolvie, snicked." There's a, I think it's Silver...
I did not notice the blocks.
Well, there's a Silver Samurai in the background. I think that's who it's supposed to be. There's a little Deadpool Jack-in-the-Box.
Oh, there's a little Rocket Raccoon.
There's a little Rocket Raccoon. And is that Lockheed, the purple...
That's Lockjaw.
Lockjaw. No, that's Lockjaw, but I'm talking about...
Lockjaw.
Okay, that is Lockheed.
And Thor the Thunder Frog.
I don't know who the white robot is, though.
The robot's Herbie.
Okay.
That's a Fantastic Four.
Okay, I don't know who that is.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and there's a little Jack in the Box with Deadpool's head, and the letters on it are PD.
I'm assuming the white plane over here, and then there's a dinosaur by the spider pig or somebody as well.
I don't know. I don't recognize those.
But I'm sure that it wouldn't just be placed in there random. Hulk, when he comes in, smashes the bricks, and it spells out smash. So that's great. Then Wolverine gets chucked into the atmosphere, into orbit.
It's a full page, though, of Wolverine getting thrown. And he's just flying, and you can see like the jet stream behind him, and he's screaming, and he's got tears falling out of his eyes.
And when he hits the apex of it, then he gets a shot of Galactus with a baby bottle on the moon with a surfer flying way off in the background. He's like, that's just weird.
It's so dumb. I love it. I love it.
So, I think that AVX was an event that needed something like this to balance it. Like, let's not be so serious, okay, guys, you know?
Yeah. AVX was pretty dour. It's actually really dark. And it takes itself very, very seriously.
Also, am I the only one who doesn't like John Romita Jr.'s art? Because he gets a lot of work and I do not like
his art.
I like John Romita Jr.'s art. But you know who I like more? Gurihiro.
Is he the colorist or what?
No, Gurihiro is actually the artist on this.
Actually, I think they're a group, isn't it? Gurihiro?
Yes. So I came into this thinking Scotty Young was the artist.
Same.
And I know Scotty Young's art. I love Scotty Young's art. Scotty Young's art is on the cover.
Okay.
The cover is Scotty Young. But if you get into the comic, you can see there's a little bit of difference. Scotty Young's art always has these weird little wild edges on it, which you can really see if you look at the cover, the bottom right corner, Gambit with the dart arrow in his forehead and the kind of crazy wild hair he's got.
Yeah,
That's like a pretty good encapsulation of what Scotty Young's art looks like, or the way he draws the Thing in the upper left corner of the cover.
Yeah.
But you get inside to the comic, and it's a lot smoother lines, a lot cartoonier. That's Gurihiro. They're a duo of lady artists from Japan. I really love their style. I've encountered it a couple of times now, just the way that they make these really cute character designs. I really like it.
I found out of them through the Avatar Last Airbender comics.
That's right. They did some work in there too.
Ooh. See, now I gotta check those out.
And recently, they were the artist on Gwenpool.
Oh, yeah.
Which was better than it had any dang right to be, I'll tell you that. That shouldn't have been good, and it was pretty great.
I have a question on page 17. Okay. I think I know page everybody. 17. So, bottom three panels. The very bottom, there is Pixie, who's fighting an Avenger, who I cannot ever remember because he's never featured in any of the stories I've read. The guy with the hair coming out of the top, he has a yellow star and then a red across the blue.
I think that's Mar-Vell, isn't it?
Mar-Vell.
Yeah. That was my guess.
Carol Danvers, Mar-Vell.
Okay. Then
potentially be Quasar.
I thought it was either a Captain Marvel character or Quasar, because I know nothing about either of those, and yeah.
In case the listener's wondering, this is the point for this story. It's to sit down and pick out all the little Easter eggs. There's frankly not... Again, there's not much of a plot. They're fighting over this bear, and then the Phoenix shows up and makes them give the bear back, and that's the end of the story.
I love how, because... Armor is a younger X-Men. She's like a little baby with a pacifier inside of this big, like, bubbly armor. And then third panel, I think they're Young Avengers. There's a girl on the back of another... this is, I think, the same character I couldn't recognize earlier. But she has little... whatever Daredevil throws around, little sticks.
That's Mockingbird.
That's Mockingbird.
Mockingbird. Yeah. Okay, so it's not a Young Avenger.
Yeah. I think for me, my favorite part in this whole thing is actually around the next page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the little Storm and...
Storm and Black Panther. They might have been married at this point in the comics, I think.
They were.
AVX was the story where they had their marriage annulled.
Mm.
Yeah. But I love it because in the background is like explosions and smoke and laser beams. And they're just sitting there holding hands.
Yeah.
And then Daredevil runs and... essentially breaks them up, and then
he says, sorry, I didn't see you there. Oh, man.
The other thing I also really like is the fact that, like Armor, Doctor Strange is super, super baby.
Oh, yeah.
He's tiny and barely fits in his cape.
It's like this little poof of hair that's just ridiculous. ridiculous. So he's more cape than baby. Then, yeah, Phoenix shows up and, give it
Can
back.
Can we talk about the Phoenix Raptor, though? The flame that manifests around the Phoenix when she
appears. It's just like a squawking rubber chicken. Oh, yeah. And see, like those little things, like, I love it because they could have just, like, ripped off Muppet Babies. You know, they could have done something else, but like any opportunity where they have a chance to put in something funny, they do. You know, not just the Phoenix Force, but also it looks like a goofy cartoon chicken. And, you know, we have this doll, we're going to make it Bucky, and we're going to give him a mask just like Bucky.
The thing I love the most about this is the fact that, like, even though it's essentially a parody of AVX, it's by no means at all representative of AVX.
Yeah.
It is...
It's most of the same characters and against each other, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, it just grabs. It's a joke. It's, you know, X-Men versus Avengers fighting. Let's just make them into babies. It's fine.
Yeah.
I would also argue that it is a bit of an art showcase. And I wanted to ask, I've already said mine. My favorite design in this whole thing is the Magneto baby. Do you guys have a favorite character design?
I think Galactus made me laugh the most, but...
I think for me, my favorite design in here is Baby Strange.
Yeah, that Baby Strange, he's man.
He's pretty great.
That's crazy.
I also think it's funny that, like, a lot of these characters who typically wear, like, leotards and everything are a lot more covered up because they're babies, which is great. But I also love the fact that, like, Storm is just wearing, like, an all-black, like... onesie.
It's a onesie, yeah. Like footy pajamas.
And it just has like her cape attached to the wrists.
Guys, page 18, Beast points up in the air because they see Wolverine falling down. Beast is standing next to Hank Pym, Ant-Man, Giant-Man, I don't know what we're calling him at this point. Anyway, you flip the page over and Wolverine lands and all of the characters that fly off, and you can see that Ant-Man, Giant-Man, on the bottom of his shorts, has a panda face.
Is that what that is? I was trying to make that into a diaper or something, and I was like, I don't even know, and it's a panda. It is totally a panda.
It's a panda face.
Why is it a panda?
It's hard to find clothes for my daughter that don't have animals on them, so.
That's fair.
It ends with just a crater on that intersection, and all that's left is a bent sign of Fury and Xavier Way, and you can see, I like how Captain America's house has stars and stripes on it. The Hulk's house is a green roof with purple walls, and then the other ones, can't really see for sure.
Well, you can see across the way there is the Cyclops room, and it's got a little X poster inside where the cradle or where the crib is.
Yeah, but like color-wise, it's not, you know, particular to one character or another. But anyhow,
you see, I think that's actually symbolic of the fact that AVX ends with the complete demolishment of Cyclops' reputation, and it also represents the fact that he loses his powers as a result of the events of AVX, showing that despite the conflict and despite the great victories he won while he was possessed with the Phoenix Force, Cyclops, in fact, was left, after losing all of his power, a broken and defeated man, a shell of his former self.
And a mad baby.
Aldo, can you put in, I don't know what kind of audio cues you have, but can you put in like a big fart noise right here after Steven's lofty attempt to elevate this? Clearly a story just about a bear, Steven. It's just about a teddy bear. I don't know what you're trying to do.
It's just about fucking bear.
No, yeah, this one was, I think this was the comic that convinced me to get Marvel Unlimited because my buddy had it and I was like, holy cow, there's stuff like this in there? This is ridiculous. I love this. You know, the art just was so different than, you know, your typical superhero art in the way that it just took it to the extreme and made it, you know, cutesy and funny. And so, yeah, that's it. I don't think there's anything more that needs to be said, but just go in and enjoy. It's fun. It's great.
Yeah, so we've talked about Eminem Punisher, which is interesting and super shallow. We've talked about A Babies versus X Babies, which is 100% shallow and also the highest of art.
It's like eating cake. After you've eaten your vegetables, you get this cake.
Oh, this is, it's 100% saccharine sweet goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But we got one other story to talk about, and this is where things get really heavy. We got to talk about the most serious, least jokey comic that we have read all day, and it's a Deadpool story. How did we get here?
Oh, geez, I don't know. This was a trip and a half.
And Aldo, you brought this to the table, so go ahead.
Yeah, so this is a comic that makes its round on the internet, and I kind of wanted to read the whole thing, because a lot of people just kind of piece their favorite parts of it and post it online. But this one is called The Neverending Struggle. It's a Deadpool comic. It's a bit of a parody of the kind of Superman trope from, like, All-Star Superman, where he hears a girl that's about to commit suicide, goes and helps her.
There's also an Ultimate Fantastic Four story where Reed Richards
does the same.
Goes up on a building and he talks to a man who is standing on the ledge getting ready to jump off. And yeah. He just talks to him. He says, I'm not gonna force you to come down. I'm just gonna talk. So there are a couple of very high profile comics where superheroes deal with suicidal individuals.
Yeah. So this is another one of those, but this one is with Deadpool, and he kind of does this in his own Deadpool way, where he finds this girl at the top of the building and tells her, you know, don't jump. If you're going to jump, do it in the Parker building. That one doesn't get enough.
That's horrid.
It's terrible. Yeah.
It's so bad.
And it catches her off guard, and she's like, you're making jokes. Really? And it kind of gets into this little tropey bit where she's like, you know, you're gonna talk me down or whatever. You don't care. You're just pretending to care. And he's like, you're right. I don't care. Like, yet. You're making it hard for me to care. Also, I'm like, as good as it's gonna get, because, like, I'm who you have. And that's kind of crappy. And it tells her that if she's really adamant about killing herself and it's gonna be her last night, he says, let's go have fun since it's your last night. And offers her to go to Hamilton because he knows a guy with tickets, even though it's sold out and tickets are super expensive. And we cut to an elderly couple who is knocked out, and Deadpool and this girl are watching Hamilton.
I love the old guy's like, Rosebud in the background.
Yes. And the next thing is... Deadpool explains that when he's feeling down, he'll grab a couple of some of the rejected calls for help for the Avengers.
Which, side note, I believe at this point Deadpool was an Avenger.
Probably. Really? I don't know.
Deadpool has been on the Avengers, and, like, it was recent enough that when that whole Secret Empire story happened just last year, where Steve Rogers was revealed to have been a Hydra sleeper agent, that actually wrecked Deadpool because he looked up to Captain America.
Oh.
Yeah, he idolizes him, and it's really funny. Some of these, I think it's earlier on in this year, or I forget which, but, like, it, like, shows a flashback of him as a kid and him wanting to be Captain America, and it's just, they meet at one point, and he's just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. It's really funny.
Yeah, so he gets, like, rejected letters, and then Ghost takes care of these things. And so the first round is they're going to go stop a drug dealer. Knocks on the door, tells her that when the peephole goes black, that's when you kick the door in.
Oh, gosh.
And kicks the door in and accidentally kicks in an old lady and knocks out her false teeth.
That page where he knocks out that old lady, it's a full page of this old woman just lying flat on her back, and she's out, and there are her dentures on the floor next to her, and they're, you know, dripping with her saliva, the cat's hissing. It's kind of a horrifying image, honestly.
To be fair, none of the letters mentioned her, he says.
Yeah. Also, this criminal lives with his mom, and I think that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
So they do that, and then they're gonna go to another place where there's hackers who are stealing people's data, and whenever they find nudes, they post them online. They break in, and Danielle, the girl who's trying to commit suicide, her hat is grabbed by one of the guys. She turns around and, like, beats the crap out of him with a baseball bat, and then just starts breaking all the computers and just kind of gets to de-stress for a moment. And it's kind of a great shot. Like, I like it a lot because it's the three panels of her just breaking monitors and towers. And it's a close-up on her face, and she's just tired and sweating. And the next panel after that is just her dropping the bat, and there's all these broken equipment around her.
Oh, man. That is such a good page, because it's like, this is a woman who is severely, suicidally depressed. And she has this great moment of catharsis where she can just take out all her aggression on this, on these computers, just trash this mess. And that very last panel with the wide shot where she just drops the bat and her head's lowered, you can just see that didn't fix anything. It felt good, but that was not the solution she needed.
So they steal a motorcycle right after that, and he takes her to the hospital. Where she gets angry at him, told because she thought after that he was going to let her go. Because he technically did kidnap her.
Oh yeah, 100% kidnapped her.
And then tells her that, you know, he's not going to force her to go inside into the hospital. He's been texting the hospital people, they're expecting her. But if she wants, he'll walk in with her and kind of essentially hold her hand through this whole process. Which they do. And they go in. And he can't think of any real advice to tell her until he leaves. And he tells her that, you know, sometimes everything sucks, but there's better stuff around the next corner. To which this comic book ends with a close-up of Deadpool's shoe after he stepped in crap.
With the sun rising, hopefully, in the background.
Yeah, you just have to find a way to keep rounding corners.
Yeah. And unlike a lot of comics, this actually has the synopsis page at the end. And it's not so much a synopsis page as it is him explaining that the writer, which I didn't mention this at all. The writer for this is Gary Dugan.
I think it's Jerry Dugan.
Jerry. And artist Matteo Lolli. They have like this, he has like this wonderful little bit here where he talks about how he wanted to do a Deadpool confronts a suicidal character story for a while. But felt that Deadpool wasn't the right character to do it. But precisely because of that, like, he kind of had to do it. And then, he talks about that little experience. It's actually, it's a really good page. If you read the comic, I recommend reading that little bit at the end. Also, that little bit at the end where he says, you know, we just need to help make the circuit between people that need help. And the professionals, immediate help can be found by calling the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK, 8255. All the best, Jerry. So we're dealing, and this is like a one-issue storyline. It deals with something that's pretty heavy that we haven't, up until this point, we've never really dealt with anything nearly this heavy or this real. We've dealt with, like, Spider-Man's terribly written divorce. thousands of lives dying at the snap of a finger. Eminem being threatened in his rap career. But this is kind of, like, as real as it gets.
And this is interesting. I actually think this comic makes for kind of an interesting contrast with Civil War. Mm. Of all of the comics that we've read, I think that's the one that compares the most. Because I think Civil War was an attempt to deal with something that could be considered a quote-unquote real issue. Like, political differences, especially differences that revolve around big life and death sort of circumstances. I think that was the idea behind Civil War, was that it wasn't meant to be just a fun beat-em-up. It was actually meant to tackle this very serious idea, and you could kind of then just project other ideas on it. Like I said, when I read it this last time, that I was thinking more about the gun control debate than anything else when we read Civil War. But Civil War fails at dealing with the real event. And Deadpool almost doesn't try. Like, it wants to have a fun story and tell jokes along the way. But at the end of the day, the line that gets me in this story is right at the very end, when Deadpool is dropping Danielle off at the hospital. He says, "Listen, I don't think you're crazy. You just need a little help. And I am not the guy to help you."
I think how he helps is his honesty. And it's rare that we get a candid moment from Deadpool. It's rare that we get a serious Deadpool. But this is, I like how they handled this.
This is something that, like, with the wrong writer, could have been a really terrible thing. A really terrible comic.
Yeah.
And I think it's dealt well, and I think part of that, part of the thing that is really good about this is the fact that, what, like you said, he's honest, right? Like, he just kind of does, he just kind of grabs her, tells her, you know, right from the start, you know, he's joking about this. He tells her he essentially doesn't care about her yet. He's trying to, but he can't. But it's also the fact that he gets it, like, right? Like, he Deadpool is a lot more of a complex character than people would tend to give him credit for. He's a character who's lost a lot in his life, who deals with comedy and fourth wall breaks, and that's kind of how he deals with a lot of stuff. But he's also dealt with a lot of complex emotions. He has lost, like, the people that he loves. He has seen people die, and it's kind of stuff that he deals with. And I think him, like Wolverine, both have that realization that they can't die, and that's might be a worse situation than dying. So I think for him, he kind of gets it that, like, she has to take a break. And maybe the best thing isn't to take her out on a night where they go beat up bad guys, but it's the only thing he can think of, and it's probably the only thing that makes him feel better. So he tries that with her, and it's, you know, it works a little bit, but at the end of the day, he still gets it, right? Like, that's not the best thing for anybody to do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe give her the help that he himself can't get her or get himself.
So it's interesting. I think Deadpool realizes almost from the beginning that he is not the right man for this job. He knows it. And he acts on it very, very quickly. It's page 12 when he and Danielle visit Hart, and they kick down the door and knock out his grandma, and then they get in the fight, and Danielle starts kicking Hart while he's down. While she's doing the kicking, Deadpool's off to the side, and he says, "Don't mind me, just texting a friend, BRB."
Yeah, I noticed that.
That's where he's texting EMS.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's getting the hospital ready to receive this patient. And I have very conflicting feelings on this story, you guys. Because part of me is like, okay, this is a story that's trying to tackle a very serious subject, but it's still trying to turn suicide into comedy, which we kind of frown on nowadays. We didn't used to. I'm reminded of the Floyd Gottfredson Mickey Mouse comics from the 1930s. I've got a collection of these, and they're great. But there's a week's worth of strips where Mickey Mouse attempts suicide because he thinks Minnie is going to marry someone else. And it's all about these failed attempts of suicide. Mickey jumps off a bridge, only there's a boat going by underneath, so he lands on the bridge. That happened. Also, Mickey Mouse wore blackface, but that's another story.
Oh, jeez.
And so, like, We've kind of gotten to this point where, you know, we used to make jokes about suicide, and then we just stopped. We do not joke about suicide anymore. And here comes Deadpool, and he's trying to joke about it. And this is, I mean, the bit where he knocks out the old lady, I'm not kidding, that makes me uncomfortable. But this is this is a pretty funny comic, all in all. Deadpool is his normal sort of quippy self, but he's also relatively charming. He's very callous, though. And at the end of the day, I think what this comic is trying to say is you can't just joke suicide away. So we're trying to have a good time here, but we have to acknowledge this is a serious problem. We can't fix it. We're not going to fix it. But there are trained professionals who can, and you need to seek help.
Yeah.
If this is you.
I don't think that the suicide is being made the joke here.
That one joke at the beginning when it says, hey, you know, you could go down and jump at Parker Industries instead of here. But after that,
at the same time, it's, and I don't know that it forgives that it excuses it, but the comic book does make a point to point out that, like, you're joking about this, like, you're joking about suicide to a suicidal person. Like, yeah. Really? I don't know that excuses it. In my book, it does, but only because it's so kind of earnest, and it doesn't do it over and over again. I mean, it kind of brings it up later when she herself jokes about going to the Parker Industries observation deck, and he's like, you made a joke. And he's like, wait, are you not joking? And you get probably one of the best facial expressions from Deadpool ever. which is on page 7, in case you're curious. But I think, I don't know, I feel like it actually tackles it pretty sensitively. I think that's the point I was trying to make. I got lost.
this comic reminds me a little bit of that great Patty Jenkins quote that's been going around. Patty Jenkins, director of Wonder Woman, in an interview with Relevant magazine, the interviewer asks, "This may be a cheesy question, but what do you want people to take away from this movie?" And Jenkins goes off. She's like, "Did you say cheesy? Cheesy is one of the words banned in my world. I'm tired of sincerity being something we have to be afraid of doing. It's been like that for 20 years that the entertainment and art world has shied away from sincerity, real sincerity, because they feel they have to wink at the audience because that's what the kids like. We have to do the real stories now. The world is in crisis. I wanted to tell a story about a hero who believes in love, who is filled with love, who believes in change and the betterment of mankind. I believe in it. It's terrible when it makes so many artists afraid to be sincere and truthful and emotional and relegates them to the too cool for school department. Art is supposed to bring beauty to the world." And again, she's talking about Wonder Woman, who is meant to be an embodiment of love. Like that's kind of Wonder Woman's deal. But I kind of think it applies to Deadpool in this context. Especially since...
Wow.
Deadpool is, in my mind, I don't like Deadpool. I don't like the character. I'm not a fan. The few Deadpool comics that I had read before this one, I just didn't like them. I think it's very much falls into this category of Deadpool is a character that winks at the audience. He shies away from sincerity in favor of telling dumb jokes. And yet, here we have a story that deals, I think, less with suicide and more with the frustration of being someone who sees this sort of struggle and wanting to help and not quite knowing where to start or how to help. But Deadpool himself does know how, and he chimes in and he makes a difference. I think that's the real takeaway for this, is if you don't know what to do, you can still find a way to do something. Deadpool didn't know how to help this woman, and so he did what he could for her, and what he could do for her was incredibly inappropriate. It wasn't what she needed, but he was able to buy time and then get her the help that she needed. I worked in mental health for several years, not like in an official clinical capacity. I worked at a psychiatric clinic, and I hated that job, to be frank. It was work that I found completely unengaging. It didn't put any of my actual skills to use. It didn't pay great, but I stuck with it for so long. Part of it was because I know for a fact that I don't have the ability to be a therapist. I don't have the empathy that I need, and I certainly don't have the patience to listen to people talk about the things that they're going through. I remember very vividly one time I was working at the checkout desk, so the patients would come and talk to me on their way out to schedule another appointment. And this woman came up. She had just been in session with her psychologist, and she was just bawling. She was crying, and she could not leave because she was so distraught. And I was just sitting there listening to her kind of talk about the hard stuff that she was going through. And I kid you not, in my head, I was singing the DuckTales theme.
What?
I couldn't cope. I did not know what to do for this woman. I did not know how to engage. I didn't want to engage. And I feel terrible about this. And then I will never forget this. Dr. Spendlove, that was the name of the psychologist that she saw. Dr. Spendlove comes out of his office and he just puts his arm around her and says, "Hey, you know, things are going to be okay. We had a good talk today. You've got your appointment scheduled for next week." He was very kind. He was very understanding and very professional. And he dealt with her expressing her emotions in a way that at the time I wasn't comfortable with. I like to think that I've grown a bit since then. This was probably about 5-6 years ago. But even so, it's like that moment taught me that maybe I'm not the right person to help someone who's in a crisis. But I was working in a capacity where I facilitated people getting that help. And for me, that was enough. It kept me in that job for a lot longer than I frankly should have been there. But I don't really regret it because of the very limited and in some ways banal good that I was able to do. And so I kind of related to this Deadpool comic because I felt, in a way, very much like Deadpool. I don't necessarily have the skills to help this person who is struggling, but I've worked in the industry long enough to know what they should do, and Deadpool found a way to help her. Maybe I could do the same thing. I hate this. I hate that I got inspired by freaking Deadpool. But, okay.
I think it's good about, you know, for people who are trying to help, know your limitations and don't try to solve the problem, because you're not going to be the one who can solve the problem. But,
amen.
You know, despite of, you know, you expect Deadpool to keep on joking and everything, but he, you know, gets her to the point when she's willing to accept help. And he gets her to the people who can help. And so, you know, it's a rare moment when he's an actual hero and there's no... You know, yeah, but he did the... I mean, okay, he did beat up the elderly. Okay, he's like 60-40 hero in this one, which is pretty, you know, pretty good split for Deadpool.
All right, final thoughts on this one?
Definitely worth reading. I'm interested to see where it ranks.
I know. Let's... Oh my gosh, I don't know. We got our list up here, right?
Yeah, I have the list up.
Okay, so our number one comic... is The Tape from Hawkeye, 2012, by Matt Fraction, and this comic was drawn by Javier Pulido. Our number seven comic, which is our last comic, is Spider-Man One More Day by J. Michael Straczynski and Joe Quesada. And so let's rank them, and let's rank them in the order that we talked about them. Let's start with Eminem Punisher, because I think this is the least consequential of the three, ironically.
Oh, man, can I just put my vote to put that below Civil War?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of want to put it above Civil War, guys.
No. Steven, seriously, stop and think about it for a second. And as funny as you think that is, it's not.
I mean, it kind of is. Guys, I really don't like Civil War.
I know you don't.
I really okay, but don't like Civil War.
Civil War has more good in it than bad. And the Eminem comic has nothing in it at all.
You see, and I don't agree with that. I think Civil War does more harm than good. And Eminem Punisher, as dumb and pointless as it is, does no harm. It could be a doctor.
Okay. I was harmed by it. It put things into my brain that I can't take out, and it's just awful. Like, you know, it's got to be number 7 or number 8 now. Or you know, 9 or 10 or whatever we get to.
I don't know, man. I'm gonna keep it above One More Day, because One More Day literally put, like, Spider-Man 3 steps back. It took him back, like, 20 years.
Yeah, okay. My argument about Eminem Punisher not doing any harm, One More Day... Yeah, One More Day is a harmful comic in a way that Eminem Punisher is just not... And so, like, I can put Eminem Punisher below Civil War. It does not go below One More Day.
I think it's going to be a while before we read something that's worse than One More Day.
The only reason why One More Day is still worse is because, you know, I care about Spider-Man. And this, I don't like what happened with Spider-Man. You know, if I cared at all about Eminem or the Punisher, you know, maybe.
Yeah. We got to find some comics to make you care about the Punisher. I think Eminem's a lost cause. Eminem Punisher is going in at number 7, then. Let's talk about A-Babies versus X-Babies.
My first thought looking at this is that it goes right between Wolverine and Thor's Battle World, which are 4 and 5 right now.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's like... It's not... Like, Wolverine is like a classic story... And it can't go above that, but I don't know. Thor's Battle World was good.
I didn't get
joy from it like I did A Babies versus X Babies.
I think my problem is I liked A Babies versus X Babies. I had as much fun with it as I did with the tape.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fun.
I
had
as much fun, but I think because it's so, like, parody and inconsequential, I kind of don't want to rank it as high because it's not at all important.
Yeah. That's fair. It's a Halloween episode of The Simpsons, which, because they're three mini episodes, they have, it's all jokes. Yeah. And so it is the marshmallows and the Lucky Charms,
but,
you know.
But at the same time, it has so much, like, background and character detail that, like, it kind of stacks up there with, like, some of the best stuff. I don't know. I would put this.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. I would put this above Thor's Battle World. It's a single issue. It's a more complete story than.
I think more importantly, wherever we end up, it'll move around.
Oh, certainly when, will.
But I think this can be one of our kind of, standards to use for one shots. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, did they put in as much little background things as A Babies versus X Babies did? Like, was there as much love given to this one shot as, you know, A Babies versus X Babies? That's, I think, a good comparison to have for these one shots, where, you know, this one is as enjoyable as some of these big arcs. Like you said, the tape, you know, I think that, yeah, absolutely as enjoyable, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the big difference here is that the tape, I feel like it runs on all cylinders, like from the art to the details to the actual story itself. I think it's all well done, and I think if it wasn't for the fact that it's a bunch of babies.
Cool fight scenes, but yeah, babies.
I agree with John that, like, Thor's Battle World is probably the best starting place for this one, because they're actually really similar. Like, A Babies versus X Babies is this fun side story that riffs on a main event, but isn't really about that event in any meaningful way.
Just like Thor's.
Thor's is kind of the same thing. It's just a riff, and it's a fun riff, but at the end of the day, it's pretty disposable. I think A Babies versus X Babies is way more fun than Thor's, and I would actually put it a little bit higher. I think I would be willing to go above Wolverine, but that's just me being snarky. I actually think between Wolverine and Thor's is the right place for it.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big gap, too. We'll fill that gap there.
Yeah. I think for me, I would agree. And I think part of the reason why I want to put it above Thor's, because I love Thor's.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, it's good.
It's one of my favorite things. But at the end of the day, Thor's ends, as good as Thor's is in those first three issues, it ends as an advertisement for the rest of the event.
Yep. Yep.
And A Babies versus X Babies concludes.
Yeah, pretty solidly, might I?
Yeah,
there are. Funny.
I did not think
more...
we were going to compare the endings of these two stories, but you're not wrong.
There are more baby comics, though. I accidentally picked up the wrong one when getting ready for the podcast, and I was like, hey, this one's great. I don't remember there being a whole food truck operated by Iron Man. Wait a minute. This is the wrong one. it's amazing, the other ones, because it's in the same vein, so we'll get to those later. But yeah, where do we put the Deadpool comic? That's trickier.
This is the hardest comic, I think, to rank.
See, Deadpool, I want to put it up around Runaways.
Hmm.
And I don't know that the single issue is better than all of Runaways Volume 1. But my gut instinct is, yeah, it is. But, I mean, it's a democracy.
I know. John, what are your thoughts? Runaways is kind of your child here.
I can't put it above Runaways. Runaways, I mean, just because of they're too different to compare. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're making a list. We're ranking. But where we look at a body of work like that, where it's 18 issues, where it's, you know, this huge arc and the start of a whole, you know, a whole series, because it's, you know, still going now, and a TV show has come from it. You know, there's a lot to it, where this is a wonderful story. This is a poignant story. This is something that's important for our day, I think, in our world, you know, with things that are happening. But you know, I don't know where on this list it would go, because it's definitely, like, in, I would say, one of the better comics we've read, but also it's just one, it's just a one shot. So how do you compare that to?
Yeah, it's also a one shot, and I guess, like, in the I guess it doesn't have a bigger impact in the rest of the Marvel universe. It's not like his. I don't know that we could call that we could not call it like historic or important, because it's only been out like a few years, and it makes. I mean, at least to me, in the circles I run around in on the internet, I see it like weekly.
Posted. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I ran across this issue on Facebook a couple of times.
That's where somebody I first read it was Instagram online. Post. Someone had posted it.
I would dare put it above Wolverine and below Runaways.
I think it goes above Wolverine. I'm kind of with you, Aldo. I kind of want to put it above Runaways. And the main reason is because I think Runaways is dragged down a little bit by the art not being as good as it could have been, because the artists weren't yet at the top of their game. And again, I kind of hate saying that because they're artists that I like. But I'm also willing to put it just beneath that, because I think... Although it means... I don't know. I'm so conflicted on this story. Overall, I think it's very good.
Yeah.
Better than it should have been. It's, easily.
And it's a weird thing to compare specifically to Runaways, because we're comparing a single issue to an 18-issue run that introduces, you know, Marvel characters that are going to be around for a while.
Uh-huh.
But we're dealing with essentially a classic character who deals with a very important issue in a single issue.
Yeah,
it's
and it's the story has some, again, kind of just weird similarities to Runaways, in that it is, I think, a very conscious attempt to connect with a group of people that feel isolated and disaffected.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as far as actually addressing suicidality, I don't 100% know how effective it is.
I think it's just called suicide, but that was a cool word you invented.
Dude, you're talking to the guy who worked in the mental health profession. Suicidality is 100% a word.
Oh, dang it. It just sounded so goofy. Okay.
I will. I see you're Merriam and raise you one Webster.
Please never say that again.
I will say whatever I want.
That's fair.
Oh, my gosh.
No. I think below Runaways is probably the right place for it based on everything Aldo said.
Yeah, I think that's
above
fair.
Above Wolverine, easily.
I agree with that only because of I just think it's important. I think it was a difficult topic, well handled.
Surprisingly well handled. Yeah. And, like, it made me feel, like, deeper emotions in a way that Wolverine, I mean, kind of did, but you had to wade through a lot of weird... potentially racially insensitive stuff to get there. So yeah, I think that's the right place for it. I was actually wondering if that was gonna break into the top two. Didn't quite get there.
So number four, just as a recap, then The Tape, then Infinity Gauntlet, then Runaways. The bottom three, One More Day at the bottom, then Eminem and Punisher, and then Civil War, which we need some more crap, because Civil War is not that bad, guys.
We got ourselves a top 10. This is it, the top 10 comics of all time.
Check. Oh god, no. We don't even have a good Spider-Man story in here.
So that concludes our discussion for the day. So in 2 weeks we will be back. We've got two more stories lined up. These are actually our first listener suggested stories, and these both come one of them directly and one of them a little bit more indirectly from Joseph. So we are going to read first the 2001 Exiles series. We're going to read issues 8 through 10. And we are going to read Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk, which is like 6 or 8 issues, but it took 4 years for it all to come out. Started in 2005. That'll be our first comic from the Ultimates line.
Oh yeah.
I'm interested because that's how the Hulk that's how Wolverine was introduced, was in a Hulk issue. So
yeah, originally the first appearance of Wolverine in mainline Marvel comics was in an issue of the Incredible Hulk, and so this is definitely an homage to that. I've read a couple of Wolverine Hulk crossovers in my time, and They're interesting. Those are two characters with some interesting dynamics. We saw flashes of that in Infinity Gauntlet, where they had that rooftop scene that I don't remember if we really talked about when we discussed Infinity Gauntlet, but... So that'll be interesting. The Exiles story that we're going to read is called A World Apart. This will be interesting. I don't know. Do you guys know much about the Exiles?
Not a thing.
Yeah, so this will be fun for you, John. Okay, so back matter. Did you guys ever read DC Metal?
No.
I'm like halfway through it.
I just picked it up last week, and it's interesting.
Are you picking up the single issues, or did they come out with a trade already?
Oh, the trade's out.
Oh, dang, I am really behind.
Yeah, so it just, the trade just came out. It's one of those hardcover deluxe editions. It's got on the cover Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in, like, medieval armor, and they're riding on the back of a Joker-faced dragon.
Wait, this is recent. This is
super recent.
Did Greg Capullo draw that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
All right, now I have to care about it. I love Greg Capullo.
Okay, so I don't like, Aldo knows this because we've talked about this, I'm not the biggest fan of Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Batman.
Oh, that's a shame. Steven, you're wrong.
DC Metal is really good.
Okay, good.
Like, it's not great. It's not great, but it's really good. It's one of the more fun DC Comics events. Yeah. Those things, I don't like DC Comics
does events that have much. Does that have any of them Dark Knights issues in them?
No, it actually does not.
Oh, that's a shame. Those are
awesome. Those are in a separate volume, which I did not read.
Okay. So the Dark Knight stuff, do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's the stories of the individual Dark Knights. So the premise of Metal is that there is an evil multiverse that is invading the good multiverse, I guess. And it's invading them with this army of alternate universe Batmen who are all evil. And some of them are also Aquawoman.
Oh, yeah, but it's like... So, I think the way they shoehorned it in is actually pretty well done. Because they explained that there's a 52 universes of the multiverse, which is essentially set in stone as...
That
as,
drunkenly staggers its way in and out of being DC canon, yes.
Yeah, but the way they handle this is they're like, yeah, so there's a, you know, there's a 52 multiverses... But each of those multiverses has an evil multiverse. So there's 52 evil multiverses, except that I think they kind of hint at the idea that, like, a multiverse, the evil multiverses aren't based on the 52 multiverses.
Isn't there one where they have mustaches?
There's multiverses based for each character. So each character has their own set of evil multiverses.
Jeez.
It was fun. I recommend it. And it does actually build on all of the Snyder Capullo Batman stuff. So I've read some of that. The Court of Owls makes an appearance and it's pretty significant. There's a lot of reference to the time when Greg Capullo killed Batman and had him replaced, as opposed to the time that Grant Morrison killed Batman and had him replaced, as opposed to the time that they killed Batman and replaced him in the 90s. I actually blanked on who wrote that. Anyway, it's a plot point they've revisited multiple times. But it references all this stuff and it builds on it. And it builds on all of the stuff that happened in Justice League. Baby Darkseid makes an appearance because did you know Darkseid is a baby now?
Are you guys still recording? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm still recording.
Okay, it just dawned on me that we're like way off Marvel.
I
was like,
wait a minute. I know. We're in the back matter section. This doesn't have to be Marvel exclusive.
You know, the problem was I was looking for this on Marvel Unlimited.
I was like, why does nothing Batman show up? Oh man, where is Batman in here?
So, thank you all for listening. The Superhuman Registration Podcast can be found in multiple places online. You can find us on Facebook, just our Facebook page, Superhuman Registration Podcast. We also have a Twitter handle. You can find us at Super Reg Podcast. At either of those places, leave a comment, tweet at us, let us know what stories you would want us to read, and we can read those in a future episode and then rank them the way we did with the three stories that we read today. Once again, thank you for joining us, and watch your back, because you are on our list.
Because your kiss is on my list.